Hey, spooky mamas, I have missed y'all. So, 18 days into 2021, it's been fucking gnarly. How's it been for y'all? I'm sending everyone light and love, and I'm telling you, we're going to manifest a better year somehow, some way. So, let's manifest, and I love you guys. Has anybody seen the new Night Stalker docuseries on Netflix about Ramirez? I really liked it. I just feel like there's such a deep dive with him, and there was so much that was not even touched. I do feel like a lot was glossed over, but I did enjoy it, and it was nice to see a docuseries that wasn't another Bundy or Manson, because we have a million of those. Also, has anyone else been obsessed with Bridgerton like I am? Like, I'm super, super obsessed. It's been amazing. We are going to be diving into Richard Marquette today. I have never heard about him before. It was an interesting read, and so we're diving in. Richard was born December 12th, 1934 in Portland, Oregon. Not much is known about his early life, but at the age of 22, Richard was arrested June 1956 for a charge of attempted rape. Unfortunately, his rape victim never came to press charges, so he was released. Again, later that year, he was arrested for disorderly conduct and then released. In August 1957, Richard attempted to rob a gas station in Portland. He beat the gas station clerk with a sack full of wrenches. He was arrested and found guilty of this crime. He was sentenced to jail for 18 months, but unfortunately was released 12 months afterwards on good behavior. On June 8th, 1961, a woman called the Portland Police Department to inform them her dog came home with a human foot in a brown paper bag. The authorities showed up to the woman's house to investigate. While the authorities were there, the dog came back up with a human hand in its mouth. The officers did a good search and sweep around the area, and they found several more body parts. It was apparent that the dismembered foot belonged to a female. The toes were painted bright red and also had webbed toes. An autopsy performed showed that the body part, both veins and arteries, were completely drained of blood, and it was believed that this happened shortly after she was killed. At the time, the authorities had no idea who this dismembered foot could belong to, so they had to go to kind of square one and figure it out. So they started working off of a missing person list of all the missing people in the area. They did first believe that the foot may have belonged to a runaway teenager in the town. She was living with her aunt, so they did go pay a visit to the aunt and question her. She stated that her niece did not have webbed toes, she did not paint her nails, that was not her niece. So they went back, started at square one, and they came across the name, Joan Cottle. She had been recently reported missing by her husband. So the detective showed up at the Caudill home to question the husband. Now, Joan Caudill was a beautiful mom. She was a stay-at-home mom with two children. When they asked the husband about the webbed toes, did she have webbed toes? He stated he never paid attention, so he could never really tell. He did let them go through the closet and pull out some shoes, and the dismembered foot size did match the shoe size in Joan's closet. Her husband did inform the detectives that the day she went missing on June the 6th of 61, she was out shopping for Father's Day, and she could have possibly stopped at a bar to drink because she has recently been depressed about her mother being ill. So on June 6th of 1961, the last day that Joan was seen, she apparently did stop at a bar. And at this bar was a man named Richard Marquette. A witness came forward later to tip off the officers. Now, I could not find a name for this witness, but apparently she was at the bar with Joan and Richard. Apparently, this witness was actually at the bar speaking with Marquette herself. And then Joan came up to the bar and kind of placed herself in Richard's eyesight, and they just started striking up a conversation. The witness stated that Richard and Joan started kind of hitting it off and drinking. It looked like they were having a good time, and she seen the two leave together from the bar. After the investigators got the tip from this woman, they were able to find Richard Marquette's residence. So they went to find Richard Marquette and talk to him. They did find his residence, and once they arrived, they found a cardboard box. Inside this box, there were two of Joan's fingers, her internal organs, and a piece of her abdomen. There was also a duffel bag containing parts of the bloody parts in his refrigerator. The only thing missing was Joan's head and Richard Marquette. Joan's head was later found near a river, and the Portland Police Department obtained an arrest warrant and a manhunt ensued for Marquette. The governor of Oregon at this time, Mark Hatfield, asked the FBI for help. The FBI agreed and added Richard Marquette to the FBI's most wanted list. Now, this was the first time ever the FBI list was expanded to 11 names, and this paid off big time. Richard had apparently spent 3 weeks in total after the murder hitchhiking around the western seaboard in Mexico. The day after he was added to the FBI's most wanted list, FBI was notified of his location. Marquette had taken an odd job for quick cash at a thrift shop in Santa Maria, California. His employer is who tipped off the FBI. He was arrested on June 30th, 1961, and on July 2nd, 1961, he led the authorities to the rest of her remains. Richard did give details of that fateful night. Apparently, Richard and Joan attended elementary school together, and Joan had recognized him. They were drinking and enjoying each other's company, so they left and went to several more bars. They both went back to Marquette's place to have consensual sex, according to him, and after sex, the two got into an argument, and then Richard choked Joan to death. He had no vehicle to dump her body somewhere, so he panicked, and he drug her lifeless body into his shower and dismembered her. On December 1961, at 26 years old, he was charged with first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison, but the jury recommended leniency. The prosecution asked for Richard to be charged with rape. They didn't believe Richard and Joan had consensual sex. I never seen where he was charged for rape, so I'm not sure what happened with that. I didn't see anything any further. Richard was to serve out his life sentence at Oregon State Penitentiary, but he arrived to prison and apparently he kept his nose clean and behaved very, very well. He was so well behaved, in fact, that he was described as a model prisoner. And after 12 years at Oregon State Penitentiary, he was released on parole in 1973. Sometime after his release, Richard somehow ended in Salem, Oregon. He was living in a trailer park and worked for a plumbing company. April 1975, a fisherman found a mutilated human remains in a local slough. The corpse was very similar to Jones. The corpse was mutilated, dismembered, and bled dry. The only part of this body missing and never found was the genitals. It was determined the remains belonged to 37-year-old Betty Wilson. Betty was from North Carolina and had a very hard life. She married at 16 and ended up having 11 children with an abusive husband. She did lose all 11 of her children to the foster care system, and after this, she ran away to start a new life. Betty ended up in Salem, Oregon as well, and she somehow met Richard. Now, I could never find what linked Richard and Betty together, but they were somehow linked. The Salem Sheriff's Department did obtain a warrant since he was the prime suspect at this time. They searched his mobile home trailer, and I seen where they did find physical evidence to tie him to Betty, but I never seen what the physical evidence was to tie them together, but they had the physical evidence. At 41 years old, Richard Marquette was arrested for the murder once more. His story with Betty was very similar to Jones. He admitted he met Betty. They both agreed to go to her home and have consensual sex. Once at Betty's home, she decided she didn't want to have sex. This angered Richard, so he strangled her and dismembered her. While admitting to Betty's murder, he did inform the authorities he committed another murder in 1974, shortly after his release. Same story. He picked this woman up at a bar, took her home, choked, mutilated, and dismembered her. He led the authorities to her remains where he buried her. He didn't know her name, and the skeletal remains couldn't be identified. The identity of this woman still remains unknown till this day, and he was never charged for this person's murder. May 1975, Richard was found guilty of first-degree murder. He has been incarcerated at Oregon State Penitentiary since June 1975, and that is where he is still alive and living today like the piece of shit he is. I hope everyone has a great week. I'm sending you love and light for this very eventful and gnarly 2021. Please contact me at Spooky Mama Podcast on Instagram. DM me. If you have any suggestions, anything, DM me. I would love to hear from you. All right, Spooky Mamas, y'all have an awesome weekend and stay spooky, babies.